It's kind of like the second part of Oscar's talk was just an introduction to the work we did with Caroline and with Benoit on random graph states. So what I will do, I will continue developing these ideas and going a little bit deeper into how the proof works and what are these random matrices we look at.
So. Basically, Carol already gave the definition and the main results we produce in this paper. So from this point of view, my talk will be somehow less interesting than his, and I don't have pictures of beautiful Poland, so neither.
So my transition slides
are just as dull as this. So let me start with a few words about random density matrices and especially about asymptotics of random density matrices, because well, if you do random matrix theory, then I guess you spend a lot of your time doing asymptotics. So let me start with restating what we call the induced ensemble of random density matrices and how this arises from random pure states. So what you do is that you start with a tensor product space, so CN tensor CK. And on this space, you put a random pure state. So this is just a uniform point, a point on the sphere of this complex Hilbert space. And then you just partial trace over the second system, the projector on this pure state. And this way, you get a random matrix, which is a matrix n by n matrix. It's a density matrix because it's positive and it has trace one. And This way you define what is called the induced ensemble of density matrices, and it's parameterized, so these are n by n matrices, and these probability measures are parameterized by the size of the environment, which can go from, I don't know, from 2 to infinity. And the connection between these random matrices and more classical ensembles of random matrices is very easy and very intuitive, is that a random matrix like that is nothing else than a Wishart matrix. So W is X star, where X is a Geneva, so I the entries. And you just have to divide this matrix by its trace. So just take a Wishart matrix, divide it by its trace. Also, you can do, since for a Wishart matrix, it's well known that its trace is independent of the normalized eigenvalues, you can just take a Wishart matrix and condition it to be of trace one. You get the same random matrix ensemble. So this is how the induced ensemble of density matrices is connected to the Wishart ensemble of random matrices. And again, here the parameter k is the same one as the environment, as we like to call it k over there. And in this case, starting with the formula for Wishart matrices, you get a similar formula for the eigenvalue density of this induced ensemble, which well this time it has the same expression, since this measure is supported on the probability simplex. So here lambda one, lambda n, these are positive numbers. They sum up to one. So this measure is singular with respect to the Lebesgue measure on Rn. But if you look at just at the simplex, at the probability simplex, it has a density given by that, and the constant, well, of course, it changes by with respect to the Wishart matrix. Carroll computed this in one of his earlier works. And again, you have this this Vandermonde determinant, which is pretty common when you look at random matrix. Good. Now, let's look at asymptotics. Let's look at these random matrices when the size goes to infinity. So you have basically what you have, let me go back to the previous slide, you have two parameters. You have this n parameter and this k parameter. Now you may take, so let's say that you're quantum information and you've never heard about random matrices, and you think about what is the most natural asymptotic regime that you can look at. Well, one idea is just fix n, so you have n by n matrices, and let k go to infinity. Well, it's a good idea, but what happens is that all your matrices, this measure will converge to a direct measure, which is supported on the identity on the maximally chaotic density matrix, which is just identity over n. So if you just fix n and k goes to infinity, your row will converge almost surely to the identity over n. So this is not so nice. And now, with some input, with some ideas from random mixtures theory, it's good to think about the regime where n and k both go to infinity, but at a constant ratio. So k grows like c times n, where c is a fixed constant, it's a fixed positive constant. And in this regime, something nice happens, is that the eigenvalues of your matrix will converge in some sense to a non-degenerate probability measure. And to look at this type of convergence, what one does is you have to define this eigenvalue, this measure, which is associated to the eigenvalues, and you have here some rescaling of the eigenvalues by c times n, since all the eigenvalues are of order one over n. In order to get something non-trivial, you have to rescale them by this constant, which is somehow different. So in the Wishart case, you have to divide the eigenvalues by n, and here you have to multiply. This is the only difference between the Wishart case and the induced ensemble case. And the limiting measures, so all these measures, when n and k go to infinity at this ratio, these measures will converge to this limiting measure, which is called the Marchenko-Pasteur measure or the free Poisson measure. So it's this is a measure which has an important role to play in free probability, and I will discuss at some point free probability, and you will understand why this measure is so important there. And it has a density, it has a it's very well known and very ubiquitous in random matrix theory. So let's look at some plots. Here, what we did is that we took one random density matrix. We sampled once from this ensemble of density matrices with n 1000 and k 1000. We got one matrix. We computed its eigenvalues, and we plotted plotted a histogram of the eigenvalues. And on this histogram, we overimposed the density of the Marchenko-Pasteur distribution, and you see that this fits well for several values of the parameters. So here you have c equals 1, c equals 2, and c equals 10. Okay. So again, this convergences, and I will talk about this later in my presentation. All the convergences of the spectral measures to the limiting measure, they hold both in moments, but they also hold in almost surely. So if you take just one matrix from a large enough for some large enough values of the parameters, then you will get you'll get something which is close to the limiting measure. Now let me move on to this novel ensemble of density matrices that we introduced with Benoit and Carroll, and we call those random graph states. So it turns out that in quantum information theory there is another notion of graph states. Ours is completely different from that. I wanted to emphasize this from the beginning, and I will just give some examples and describe in detail how this works. So the idea is that we start with a graph, and to each given graph we will associate a probability measure on density matrices, and this is how it works. So basically there are just two important ideas: is that the edges of our graph will encode entanglement, and the vertices will encode mixing. This is how it works. So we have a set of edges or bonds B1, BM, and to each bond we associate a maximal entangled state. So we have lots of maximal entangled states, and from these maximal entangled states we construct a state on which corresponds to the graph, which I call psi tilde, which is just the tensor product of these maximal entangled states. So for now, we have just a deterministic state, which is a tensor product of maximal entangled states. Okay. Now let's move on to the vertices. So we discuss edges. Let's move on to the vertices, and we take this psi tilde, this deterministic state, and what we do with it is that we apply local unitaries at each vertex. Right, and of course these unitaries will be independent hard distributed matrices. And this corresponds to a tensor product of these matrices. And this way we get a state psi gamma is the initial graph, which is random because the unitary matrices here are random, and which belongs to the to this large Hilbert space which is associated with the graph. And again, the unitary matrices which are associated with the vertices are independent. So again, the main idea is that to each edge we associate a maximal entangled state, and to each vertex we associate independent unitary matrices. Now let's look at some examples, because all this can be it's not that clear. Let's look at the simplest graph one can think of. So here I have a graph, this one, which has one vertex and one edge, which is actually a loop on this vertex. So we allow, in our graphs, we shall allow loops and multiple edges, by the way. So here you have just the graph, just the abstract mathematical object. And here, let's look at this random pure state that we associate to this graph. So again, we have one edge, so we have two Hilbert spaces, H1 and H2. To the edge here, we associate a maximal entangled state between those two Hilbert spaces. And at the end, to the vertex V1, we associate with a unitary matrix V1, which acts on H1 tensor H2, which will mix this this maximal entangled state. Okay? So again, one edge, one maximal entangled state, one vertex, one Haar unitary matrix. Right? This is not very important, but here actually, for the rest of my talk, I will assume that all these Hilbert spaces are isomorphic and they are of dimension n, which is fixed for me. Right? In order to easily define this maximal entangled state, so that everything works out. Okay. So actually, what is this random state that we defined here? What are we doing? We are taking a fixed state, a deterministic state, maximal entangled, and we are applying a large unitary matrix on the product system. So this is exactly a uniform pure state on H1 tensor H2, on this product Hilbert space, right? So this is nothing new, actually. We have just a pure state on H1 tensor H2, so nothing interesting over here. Let's move on. Let's consider the next graph in our hierarchy of most easiest graph in the world. So we have now two vertices, V1 and V2, and one edge between them. So again, one edge, we have one maximum entangled state, and at each vertex we apply unitary matrices which are independent, and again we have here a random pure state. So what is this random pure state? Now the question is, one thing which is important about this random pure state is that it's maximum entangled, because what we are doing is just we are applying local basis changes in H1 and H2. So this is a good way to define a probability measure over the set of all maximum entangled states. Right? The difference between this guy and this one is that here the unitary which acts on both Hilbert spaces. So here we have the unitary group over n squared by n squared matrices, and here we have just the product of unitary groups on n and n matrices. Good. Now let's move to some more interesting examples. Again, to this graph we associate a product of two maximum entangled states. We have three vertices, so we have three independent unitary matrices which act on the respective Hilbert spaces. So this one acts on the first one, this one acts on both those guys. So here we have n squared by n squared matrices, and again the last one on the last Hilbert space. So Carol already described this example, so I won't spend much time on it. And again, a slight modification of this one, where we add a loop here. So adding a loop, we add these H5 and H6, these two new Hilbert spaces, with a maximal entangled state between them. And we have now V3, this large unitary matrix, which has size n cubed, right? Because we have H4 tensor, it acts on H4 tensor H5 tensor H6. Okay, so this is the construction of probability measures on pure states associated to graphs. Okay. Now before I move on to marginals, are there any questions about this? Good. Now we have pure states. We'd like to get density matrices. So how do we do that? Well, we copy what it has been done for the induced measure. So we are going to take partial traces or marginals of these random pure states. So in order to take a partial trace, we have this graph with several Hilbert spaces. In order to define what is a partial trace, we are just going to say which Hilbert spaces you are going to trace out. So from a mathematical point of view, what we do is that we specify a partition of the set of Hilbert spaces we have into two classes, the class of Hilbert spaces which we trace out, T, and the set of Hilbert spaces which we don't trace out, so the Hilbert spaces which survive this partial trace operation. And this way, starting from this random pure state psi, we define a density matrix just by taking the trace over all the Hilbert spaces in T, right? So this is a large partial trace over, for instance, here you take a partial trace over H2, tensor H4, tensor H6. Okay? And this way we get a random density matrix. So what we call a marginal of a random graph state is just it's specified by the graph and a partition of the set. So just saying what subspaces are you tracing out and what subspaces are you keeping. And here at the end we get a density matrix, which is an operator on H1, tensor H3, tensor H5. So the subspaces which did survive the partial trace. Good. Now we would like to study these random matrices. And one way to do that, maybe the most common way, is look at moments. So to compute this moment, so X is a random matrix, you just raise it to the power of 2, you take the trace, and then you take the expectation. These are the moments of our random density matrices, and we would like to understand those numbers. Now, recall that our graph states are defined by the deterministic states, maximum entangled states, and products of random unitary matrices. So we have the randomness is given in this model by random hard distributed unitary matrices. Okay. So in order to compute moments, we have to compute integrals with respect to this measure, these products of hard measures. And turns out that there is a good way to do this. We have the technology to do this kind of things. And the main tool, the principal ingredient in our proofs, is this Weingarten formula, which is no more and no less than a formula which allows to compute these types of integrals. So U is a hard distributed measure, and you can just compute the average over products of inputs in this of coordinates of this matrix. This is a formula which was introduced by Benoit, and so this integral is given by what? It's just a sum over some combinatorial object here, just a couple of permutations. Here you have some combinatorial terms, and these are just the Kronecker symbol, and times. So to each term we have a factor which is called the Weingarten function, and again there are formulas for this function. This is a combinatorial object which has many interpretations. You can define it in many ways. You have explicit formulas, but the problem with this function is that it's not easy to compute. Even numerically, it's not easy to. If I give you g equals 10 and alpha beta some permutations in S, well, actually the p is the problem. The larger the p, the more difficult it is to compute this this function. Good. And again, if here you have. So you see, here you are integrating products of U and products of U bar, and if the U's are, if so, you have to have the same in order that for this integral not to be trivial, you have to have the same numbers of U and the same numbers of U bar. Otherwise, you get zero by a simple argument by unitary invariance. So what we are going to do now is just apply this formula to compute this expectation value or this integral. And once you do that, you'll see that you get a formula. For each n, you have an exact formula, which works for each n. But as I said, the Weingarten function is not easy to compute for fixed values of n. However, we have very good asymptotic formulas for the Weingarten function when n goes to infinity. So now we are going to look at asymptotics of these random of these random density matrices. And when you do that, when you use the Weingarten formula asymptotically, so in the limit n goes to infinity, you'll see that you have these sums here, which are indexed by permutation in SP. So notice that here, P is a finite number, so P is fixed. When I compute the pth moment, here I have just a finite number of terms. The parameter which goes to infinity is n, the size of my Hilbert spaces, which corresponds here to the D, to the size of the unitary matrices. Well, you can have n by n unitary matrices on n squared by n squared unitary matrices. But here, D is the parameter which goes to infinity. So again, you have only a finite number of terms, asymptotic, which depends on whatever moment you want to compute. So when you do this, when you apply this formula, which looks really, really difficult, really ugly, actually, you see that you have some terms which you have to look at the power of n. In each term, and you have to look at those terms which are dominating. And when you do that, actually, you see that what you have to do in order to find the dominating terms, you have this problem is equivalent to computing a maximal flow in a network. So, in order to solve this minimization problem for the to find the dominating terms in the Weingarten sums, we are going to associate to each graph a network. Which is so everything. So this happens at non-random level. So this is just graph theory. So each graph I associate the network in the following way. Well, I have two special vertices, the identity vertex and the gamma vertex. I won't talk about what these guys mean. And to each vertex of the graph, of the initial graph, you have you associate a new vertex in this network. And then you see. you have to put edges between these vertices, and for each edge in the initial graph, you put an edge in this network of capacity 1, because here you have only one edge, capacity 1 because you have only one edge, and here you have to put a loop. You should put a loop there, but you know when you compute flows in a network, putting a loop here doesn't will not increase or decrease the flow. I mean it has no relevance. And then you add edges between the identity vertex and beta 1, beta 2, beta 3. And to each, you add an edge of capacity. How many vertices here, how many Hilbert spacing you are tracing out? Here I'm tracing out the only vertex, so I'm adding an edge of capacity 1. Here I'm tracing out nobody, so no edges between identity and beta 2. And here I'm tracing out two guys, so I put an edge of capacity 2. And to gamma, I add edges in the same way, but I'm counting the Hilbert spaces which survive. Here, just this guy survives, so I have one. Here, two guys survive, I have two. And here, nobody survives, so I have zero. Okay? So in this way, to a graph, I associate this network. Now, here is more or less how you construct this network. So the idea is, again, you have there are no asymptotics here. There is no probability theory here. You just, to a graph, you associate a network. And the main theorem of our paper is that, well, actually, the moment, the pth moment of this graph state, of this random, of this marginal of a graph state, behaves like n to the power minus x times p minus 1. So p is the moment here, times some combinatorial term. So this is just a constant. It may depend on p, of course. It depends on the graph. But it doesn't depend on n, plus some of 1. So this is the first order in the asymptotic expansion of this moment with respect to the parameter n, which goes to infinity. And now x here, the x here, which is really the important object, is the maximum flow in the network that I introduced earlier. So to find the largest, the dominating term in the Weingarten expansion, all you have to do is just not look at this awful formula, but just compute a maximal flow in a network associated to a graph. So this is a purely combinatorial problem, actually. Now, it will turn out that this combinatorial term, it will be important, it will be very important, but here I just want to stress out that the first term is given by the maximal flow in the network. And the network will come back at later stage.
paper rain?
Well, I don't think it's true for p equals 0 because, no, this is true only for p larger than 1, I guess.
The rank, I guess, is just n to the x.
The rank of the matrix is just n to the x, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, so it is true.
So it's true.
But
the thing
okay, sure, it is true, yeah. Okay. I was looking, yeah. I thought it was negative, yeah, sure, it's true. Well, it's true for p equals 1 also. So, yeah, it's true for all. Good. Now, let me move on to
scattering distributions. So, what are these distributions? Dr. already talked about this, so I'll be moving faster to this part. So, take a random matrix, which is the product of Ginibre matrices, times their conjugate in the right order. This way, you get a positive matrix, and you can compute its distribution, and you will get a measure PS, which is called the S Foucault-Catalan measure, with moments given by some generalization of the Catalan numbers. This is why we call it the Foucault-Catalan measure. And the way it arises in our work and the way it arises in free probability theory is that these moments count the number of chains in the lattice of non-crossing partitions. I won't go into details here, but non-crossing partitions are central to the combinatorial point of view in free probability theory, and so this is how these measures arise in free probability. And again, another way of seeing these measures is just you take a marching capacitor measure, P1, so P1 is just a marching capacitor, and you take the convolution, so Sherban talked about this earlier this morning, so you take P1 times P1 times P1 times P1, S times, where this times, this funny looking symbol, is the convolution that the S transform linearizes. So you actually, what you do is you take products of independently rotated random matrices. But again, I don't want to say more. And you have here, Carol already showed this, the marching capacitor measure, the blue line, and P2, the red line. Good. Now, what I'm going to do next is I'm going to show you graphs which have this limiting distribution, which have the Foucault-Catalan measures as limiting distributions. And this is how it works. Now let's start with the first one, this guy. So again, a vertex with a loop. And so this is the pure state associated to this graph, and I'm taking the partial trace over one of the two Hilbert spaces. Right? So this is no more nor less than the induced measure for k equals n, actually. And the network that I associate to this marginal is that, so I have only one vertex, beta 1, and I have an edge between identity and beta 1 because I trace out one guy, and I have an edge here because I trace out one guy. I could put ones, yeah.
Whenever you see edges that don't have nothing about them, it's capacity 1, okay? Now, the maximal
flow in this network is 1. So this guy, this random matrix, will have rank n, as you suggested earlier. And again, so the moments will behave like n to the power minus p minus 1 times some combinatorial term. And I feel that the combinatorial term, it depends on the residual network that I get starting from this network and taking out the maximal flow. So taking out the maximal flow, I take out these two edges because I already use their capacity for the maximal flow, and I get an empty network. And whenever I get an empty network, the combinatorial term, which was in a factor of n, is just the number of non-crossing partitions. So here I have just one vertex, I have one non-crossing partition. So I recover the Catalan numbers, and the measure which has moment, the Catalan numbers, is the matching capacitor measure. So here you recover the result for induced measures, which is that the asymptotic limit of the induced measures are the matching capacitor measure. So again, this is the looping summary, it's no more no less. Now, let's go to S equals 2. So I'm looking at this graph now. So two vertices, one edge, and one loop attached at each vertex. I'm looking at this marginal. So the graph, at this graph, you have this one. And I trace out two guys here and one Hilbert space there. And the network which corresponds to this is that one. So again, here you have capacity 1, capacity 1, capacity 1. And again, you can convince yourself that the maximum flow in this network is 3. Right? You send 1 unit of flow here, 1 unit of flow there, and one unit of flow like this. Okay? So your density matrix will have almost surely rank n cubed. And now, what is the residual network? Again, the residual network is empty. Yeah, because I use all the capacity in the edges for my maximal flow. So the only condition that I have for the beta 1 and beta 2 is that somehow beta 1 should be smaller than beta 2, because I send flow from identity to beta 1, then to beta 2, then to gamma. And this condition, actually, when you do the actual computation with the Weingarten function, amounts to having two non-crossing partitions, which are beta 1 is smaller than beta 2. And we call that this, the number of all non-crossing partitions which verify this is the second Fuss-Catalan family. So actually, this random matrix, this model of random matrices will converge asymptotically to to FS2, to the second Fuss-Catalan measure. And you can go all the way to the general case. So you have S, a graph with S vertices, one loop here, one loop at the beginning, one loop at the end, and one edge between each guy. You trace out two guys here, one in every middle vertex, and one at the end. And you get this network. And again, you have a maximal flow of S plus 1. And again, the residual network will be empty. And you have to recall that you send 1 unit of flow from the identity but to beta 1, then to beta 2, then all the way to beta s, and then all the way down to gamma. And this corresponds to this condition on the non-crossing partitions. And again, you get the Fuss-Catalan measure. Yes?
Non-integer s.
Well, non-integer, no, because you have to have an integer number of vertices. Yeah. So yeah, I should say that Shirvana studied. So these Fuss-Catalan measures already appeared in some other topic of free probability, and it was kind of a coincidence that we stumbled upon these measures here. Good. How much time?
8 minutes. Now let me talk a little bit about area laws. I already give an introduction about this. So we would like to understand if area laws hold or not in our models. So we have graphs. We take a practice over some subsystem, and we would like to understand if this holds, if area laws hold. And this is the theorem that Carol stated, that if we have an adapted marginal of a graph state, and what do I mean by an adapted marginal? So this is a very particular type of marginal. It's a marginal where, for each vertex, either I trace out everything, either I trace out nothing. So I cannot have vertices where I trace out one guy and I leave two other guys. So it has to be all or nothing. And so for this particular graph state, the area law holds. And it holds exactly, so there is no correction here. And actually, you can see this by looking at the random matrix. So there is nothing, basically there is nothing to prove here. This is a very easy result. But there are two interesting things. First of all, the area law holds, so we are happy. And it holds in this way. So here, so I said that you have an adapted margin. That means that you see in V2 and V4 I trace out everything, and in the other vertices I keep all the systems. So you can think about this part of the graph being traced out, and I don't touch the right hand side of the graph. And now the area law, recall that an area law means that the entropy should behave like the area of the boundary between the two regions times log n, and I can very easily call the area of the boundary here the number of edges between these two sets of the partition. So again, this is not difficult. This is like a rather easy computation. But now I will give a proof of this which is more complicated than it should be, but that we hope to generalize to some more general marginals, so to marginals which don't have this property of being either all or nothing. And the proof goes like this. Let's look at a network of an adapted margin. So this network has property that the edges that I trace completely are only connected to the identity, and the edges that I don't trace at all, and sorry, the vertices that I don't trace at all are connected only to gamma, right? So I have to compute the maximal flow in this network. And you see you have the word maximal flow, you have area law, which means the area of the boundary, edges that are cut. So already in your mind you say to yourself that I have to use the maximum min cut theorem. This is exactly how this works. The minimum cut in this network is just you have to cut these edges here. So again, using the maximum min cut theorem here is not the easiest way to answer this problem, but we hope to go beyond this case, beyond the simplest case, and to generalize this to marginals which are not adapted, so to a more general situation. Good. Now let me spend my last 5 minutes about giving you some ideas of how the proof works in this situation, which will give me the opportunity to talk about a work that I did with Benoit about graphical Weingarten calculus. So you have the idea behind this is that, well, you have this Weingarten formula, which is terrific. I mean, it works for all n. But, you know, when you write it down, you have all these sums and the Kronecker symbols. And we try to write this formula in a more graphical way, in a more intuitive way. And it goes like this. So again, this is our main theorem. And the idea was to compute moments of this random matrix, right? And to compute moment means the expectation of the trace of some power of our random matrix. And how do we do this? The expectation here is taken with respect to the Haar measure, actually to a product of independent Haar unitaries. So we have to use expectation over unitary groups, that is the Weingarten product. And we introduced a graphical, well, it's not actually that we introduced this. This kind of graphical calculus exists since a very long time ago. So in the works of Penrose, you can find this. So it's just a way of representing tensors, graphical. So again, this is nothing new. I will just speak briefly how this works. So let's say that you have a tensor. So here V1, V2, V3 are vector spaces. And it's a tensor in these... So V1 times V2 times V3, and you have some duals of these spaces, V1 dual and V2 dual. And to this, you associate a box, M, with some labels attached to it. So to each primal vector space, I associate a black label, and to each dual vector space, a white label. And again, vector spaces which are isomorphic are denoted by the same shape, right? Now, you have vectors, it's just a box with a black label, and linear forms just a box with a white label. Right. Now, when you multiply these tensors, when you apply tensor contractions, you just add wires between V and V star. So a tensor contraction is just the canonical application V tensor V star to C. So the product of two matrices. So a matrix is what? A matrix is a box with an input and an output. B again is a box of an input and an output. And so the product, you just add the wire between the input of this guy and the output of this guy. To get a trace of a matrix, you just add the wire between its input and its output. And if you write this in matrix coordinates, you will be easily convinced that this is indeed a trace of the matrix. And now let's move on to partial traces. So here D is a matrix from V1 tensor V2 to V1 tensor V2. So to get the partial trace over V1, I just add the wire between the V1 labels, and I leave the V2 labels off. Okay? So now, the belt state, this is a very important object in quantum information, and it has a really nice box associated to it. It's just the box, actually. So you have two outputs, you have two Vs. And actually, if you write this to coordinates, you can see that all you have to do is add a wire between the two V's. Because when you write this in a basis, it's just the tensor of EI tensor EI. Here, there are some technicalities because normally you shouldn't add wires between two black labels, because this is the only permitted operation. But you know, the Bell states, they are not canonical, so you have to do some components. OK. Now, let's look at this random graph state. And let's look at how does it look in our graphical formulas. So recall that psi 1,2 was a Bell state. So this is just psi 1,2. Psi 3,4, again, a Bell state. Psi 5,6, a Bell state. Now, I have to take projectors over this Bell state. So here, this guy times this guy is just the projection on psi 1,2. Again, here and here. And then what I did is I applied local unitary operation. So U1 acted just on this guy. U2 acted on H2 tensor H3. And U3 on H4 tensor H5 tensor H6. So this is, in our graphical formalism, this is how this random matrix looks. Right? So these are independent unitary matrices. And I will just call this row S. So you see it has 6 inputs and 6 outputs. Good. Now I want to take a marginal of this guy. So that here I will put crosses, I will trace out some of the Hilbert spaces, and tracing out, again, what does it mean? It means adding wires between the inputs and the outputs of the corresponding Hilbert tool. So again, let me go between and forth to the previous two sides. So here I just add wires on 1, 4, and 5, because I traced out H1, H4, and H1. And now I get a row S, which is an operator, on the spaces which survived, H2, H3, and H6. And now, so up to now, nothing new. This is just Penrose's way of drawing tensors. Now, let me move on to the Weingarten formula, this formula over here. And actually, we have a way of computing the expectation value of a tensor that we drew like before with a Weingarten formula. And all you have to take some steps to do that. I don't have much time, so I will not go into details. You have to erase all the boxes, all the unitary boxes, because once you take an expectation, there are no more unitary matrices, there are no more random unitary matrices. You have to erase the boxes and somehow connect the labels that you are left out with. Let me show you some examples. Not too many, just maybe one or two. No, I'm joking. Just one. So, let's compute a very easy exercise, compute the expectation value of some element of a unitary matrix. Well, I have to take the absolute value squared, because otherwise, you know, the Weingarten formula tells me that it will be zero. So, this is Uij. This diagram here corresponds to Uij. You see, I'm taking U, the matrix, and I'm taking the element in position I and J. So I'm multiplying with the column vector J and the row column vector I. And here I'm taking the same thing conjugated. So this is Uij bar. This is a random number, right? A random positive number. I want to compute its expectation with the Weingarten formula. Well, first I have to do this. The first step I have to take is do some technical step, which is no more nor less than replacing U star with U bar, or just taking the transpose. Now, the next step in the graphical Weingarten formula is just erase the U and U bar boxes. And the final step, you have to connect all the remaining white labels between them and all the remaining black labels between them. Here you have only one way to do that. Just this guy with this guy and this guy with this guy. Now, let's look what we are left with. We're left with this tensor times this tensor. But this is just a scalar product between J and J, and this is a scalar product between I and I, and you get 1. So this diagram, after the graphical Weingarten formula, is equal to 1. And when you apply our result, the expectation value of Uij, absolute value squared, it's just the value of the diagram times the Weingarten function. You have 1 times, well, the Weingarten function in this case is equal to this, 1 over n, and you get 1 over n. This is the well-known result. And very quickly, I will skip the second example. I want to show you the third example, probably. This is a very well-known operation. We start with the matrix, we conjugate it, and you average over the unitaries. You already know what the answer is. So I'm just going to show you how this works with our calculus. This is the diagram. Start with A conjugated. First step, replace U star by U conjugate. Then erase the U boxes. And then connect the remaining white labels with the remaining black labels. There are not many ways to do that. There is just this only way. This guy with this guy, this guy with this guy. And what do you get? The trace of A and this tensor. But this tensor is the identity. So the value of this diagram is just trace of A, which is a number, times this matrix, the identity. And you get this well-known result that twirling a matrix gives you just the trace of A divided by trace of A times the identity over M, which is a very easy result. But I just wanted to show how you can get this with our calculus. Just let me finish by giving you some perspective or some ideas for future work. So we have looked at some very particular graphs, maybe with no physical motivation. And the next step will be to look at lattice graphs, so graphs which are really, or which have maybe a physical motivation, right? And I showed you how you can get some distributions like the Foscaton distributions, but there are other possible limit distributions, and we'd like to understand what can we get from this model of random matrices. Let me mention this last step, which is the work which we are working on currently, is to get more general area loss and to show that actually area loss always holds for our model, for all possible marginals, not only the adapted one. And again, there is another way to define random states associated to graphs, this time by vertices which will encode entanglements, so maybe GHD states, and edges which will encode unitary operations. So recall that in our model we have vertices which encoded mixing and edges which encoded entanglement. So you can do the dual way, the dual thing. And maybe this model will be as interesting as this first one, or we don't know. So this is work they're working for us. Thank you.
One super urgent question.
Yes.
In the random graphics, if you take the matrix at each vertex to be the same, can you say anything?
It's a lot more difficult than this case. Having independent unitary matrices makes the computation easier. But having the same matrix, you do very complicated diagrams, and the combinatorics just become untractable.
So you've thought about it.
Sorry?
So you've thought about it?
Yes. Yes.
Lost.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I missed the beginning of your talk, so maybe I'm asking something you mentioned. You seem to be looking at unitaries only. I mean, you're changing the, you're starting with Pearson and you take unitaries. What about when you take a random projection in these nodes so that you get something like a random hips?
Exactly. So this, we already had this question in the talk before, which Gal gave. We know that there may be connections, and we are actively looking into this problem.
Thank you. Reassuring.
Let's thank both speakers again and have a coffee.